Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:10 Greenwich Mean Time. Today is February 22nd. Today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And this has been really quite an exciting week for a number of markets. Particularly in the precious metal markets, we've seen gold and silver break upwards, and of course, platinum has been leading the way all along and has hit a number of new highs this week. Although towards the end of the week it lost a little bit of momentum below $2,200 and has fallen a little bit in here today and down a little bit yesterday as well, but nothing in the way of downward dynamics. This certainly wasn't a downward week, and it will probably require a quite sizable downward dynamic to indicate that this very powerful uptrend has ended. But as I said, it is losing momentum and it is certainly high risk up at these levels. Looking at the oil price, oil also hit a new high this week over $101 and is marginally off that at the close in here today at $99. Natural gas also appears to be breaking upwards from this rather lengthy correction and breaking upwards from this base of the last 2 years and above $9 in here today. Natural gas has a history of, over the last couple of years at least, and certainly prior to that big move in 2005, of having failed upside breaks. And it really does need to maintain this move above $9 to attract a lot more bullish activity into this commodity. There are a number of reasons why natural gas should be going up, but it's failed to do so over the last couple of years, and I think I'll talk more about that later. Looking at the stock markets, well, stock markets have been what can only be described as backing and filling quite a lot over the last week. I think the most important thing that's happened in stock markets over the last month or so was that selling climax on the 22nd of January. Then they all had very good rallies, some better than others, and we're seeing a consolidation of that gain at the moment. There's no major market in the world has broken down. That certainly wasn't the case this week. A number of markets, quite a few markets, have broken upwards above those February highs. So now they have two higher lows, and they have a higher low and two higher highs, and that's important because if you've only got Vietnam and Morocco breaking downwards, and you've got lots of markets putting in the basis for an uptrend, that's got to be, at least from a very factual perspective in terms of law of averages, there are more markets looking better than worse, and that is certainly something to be bullish about. So certainly, that is something that we need to become informed about. Now, looking at Wall Street, and certainly Wall Street is going to have a major impact on what happens in other markets, primarily because the credit crisis is centered in the US. That definitely has Made in the US written on it. But it's the same story on Wall Street as it is with many other markets. We had a good rally, and while Wall Street has been one of the Well, a number of those indices have failed to rally very significantly from those January 22nd lows, they certainly haven't broken downwards. Today's action is really very, very positive. You had, when I got back from the hospital this evening, markets were down about 1.5%, or the Dow was down in excess of 100 points, and they're closing out the day almost up 100 points on the Dow, which is really quite positive action. And it shows us that we are starting to get demand returning to this market at slightly progressively higher levels. And that tells us that there is buying as the market weakens, which is telling us again that there is slightly more demand than supply at current levels. Whether this actually turns out to be the bottom of this reaction is far too early to say, and we won't be able to say conclusively that this was the case for quite a long time to come. But what we can say is that we've seen very good bullish activity here, particularly following that really emotional selling climax that we saw almost a month ago, well, exactly a month ago today. And that is something that allows us to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, at least for higher to lateral ranging for the majority of stock markets. It is remains unlikely that many of these markets are going to rally right back up to their highs in a fashion similar to what they did back in August, because, well, for one thing, they've probably fallen considerably more than then. There is a lot of trading overhead, and there is, I think, a proof factor. People have been burnt once and they don't want to be burned twice. So it will take time for confidence to return to stock markets. And there is certainly still the possibility that we will have further revelations regarding the credit crisis, and there are increasing worries about default risk. But we will allow the chart action to guide us, and for the moment, stock markets are looking quite positive. The bond market is practically the mirror image, because you had a buying climax on treasuries on the 22nd, so 1 month ago, and they've fallen from that level. That flight to quality that we saw a month ago is unlikely to be repeated. We are seeing that money is starting to flow back into equities, but it has certainly flowed into the commodity sector, with gold and oil and silver and platinum all making new highs, and you have soybeans and corn, and even wheat is now starting to look positive again, as is oats and rough rice, and of course coffee, all looking extremely positive. So certainly we are seeing money flowing into the commodity sector, and I suppose that is in partly due to a hedge against inflation. Because the Fed have lowered interest rates aggressively, and I believe that that was entirely necessary to mitigate the risk of really quite a, the potential for a really quite severe recession in the US. So I'm all for the policy that the Fed belatedly employed to help support the US economy. I think it would have been careless and reckless to have lost the growth potential from the stock market and the housing market in the same year. So, with that aside, the longer term potential is inflationary when you have pumped this amount of liquidity into the system. But the chances are that because these interest rates have come down so fast and so quickly, and to such an extent, and the fact that they're probably going to come down even further, it has probably lengthened the credit cycle. Bond yields have fallen aggressively, and it continues to be likely that they are going to range over the coming years. But over the much longer term, we are likely to see inflationary pressures coming upwards. What I would expect to see is that if interest rates fall further, that they will eventually find support above where they found support the last time the Fed was easing, so above 1%. And I think that is not an unreasonable expectation. And when they rise once more, they'll probably rise to levels that are above the recent highs, so above 5.5%. And over time, this is something that will certainly impact commodity markets, stock markets, and the bond market. We have entered a period of a new inflationary period. We've had a disinflationary secular trend which ended in 2003. And it's certainly putting up a fight because inflation hasn't risen to any great extent, particularly in the developed world. However, with the masses of liquidity that are being added to the market, and of course, this is not a new phenomenon, we've had liquidity being poured into the market following every financial crisis or deflationary risk. The risks are the, sorry, the reasons for this are manifold, but of course, there is no central banker in the world today wished, or and does wish now, to repeat the mistakes that Japan employed following the bursting of their property and stock market bubble in 1989. They're certainly not going to repeat the mistake of squeezing for too long, and they are, or they have historically, particularly under the auspices of Mr. Greenspan, added enormous amounts of liquidity whenever there has been the risk of any deflation. So that is something that has occurred certainly through the Asian financial crisis and the Russian debt default and Y2K and 9/11. And it's happening now. It happened in August. It happened in May last year. And not just in the big crises which we're encountering right now, but last year's medium-term correction was nowhere near as serious, and yet large amounts of liquidity were added to the system. And of course, the Fed is not doing this on its own. If the Fed was the only stock market, or sorry, if the Fed was the only central bank in the world adding liquidity at this rate, then the dollar would plunge to an infinitesimally low level. But of course, in the competitive world of globalization, there is no country wants a strong currency or is willing to tolerate a strong currency for any particularly long length of time. So, as the Fed is adding liquidity, so are other central banks in a competitive devaluation of their own currencies. And that is why we haven't seen any massively big trends in those reserve currencies like the pound and the euro and the dollar. Although, certainly over the last 6 months, the dollar has weakened considerably against all of these currencies. But for every cent that the dollar weakens, the euro is getting that cent stronger. And the Europeans certainly don't want a euro that's very much over $1.50. And we can expect interest rate cuts probably sometime this year in the eurozone, both to protect the growth of the eurozone, but also to help protect that growth by weakening the euro. So that is something that is certainly an issue going forward, because with dollar weakness, that is also helping dollar-denominated commodities to push upwards. There's a very clear example of this when you see that when you look at the cocoa price, because cocoa is denominated in the UK in pounds and in the US in dollars. And the US performance of the commodity far outstrips that of the UK commodity because of that dollar difference. And it is a very good example of how commodity prices are being flattered by the weak dollar. Of course, with the oil price hitting $100 and the argument coming back again that we're going to run out of oil, of course, we're not going to run out of oil, but we're going to run out of cheap oil. And because of the emergence of so many billions of people into the consumer economy, and because they are consuming vastly less of just about every commodity than we do in the Western world, but their per capita consumption is growing, and because there are so many more of them, they will be consuming far more commodities, not just now, but in the future. And as their growth accelerates and is sustained, not only will this be a temporary factor, but it will become a permanent factor. And this will lead us into a much larger inflationary cycle, because we can expect the prices for most commodities to increase considerably over the next 20 years. While inflation-adjusted charts are not particularly valuable when it comes to predicting how high prices are going to go, they're very good at showing us in relative terms just how low commodity prices are. We have lots of inflation-adjusted charts in the chart library, and I think it is very educative or instructive to go in and have a look at some of those, because even though commodities like oil or gold are hitting new nominal highs now, these are quite low levels historically for these commodities. Over the last 5 years, we have talked increasingly about supply inelasticity meets rising demand, because the resources industry, and that's pretty much all commodities, went through a secular bear market for the last 20 years, which ended around 2001. And throughout that time, the companies that survived were the companies that cut expenditure to the bone and mined the very best of the reserves available. And that allowed them to survive. But of course, that type of ordeal scarred their ability to be able to look longer term at the bullish potential for their industry. I think it was Donald Cox has publicized the phrase that those who loved it least sorry, who know it best, loved it least. And that is certainly the case with the resources sector. Even today, with oil at $100, we continue to see oil executives being very reticent about spending a lot of money on exploration, both, of course, because oil is really rather expensive and they have to pay much more for the rights to get in there and explore in the first place, but also because there is still that perception that they might actually be able to get in and buy it at a cheaper level. And I think that is questionable. There's no evidence on the longer term charts for oil that we're going to see it come back to $40 or less than that anytime soon at all. I think worst case scenario is that it pulls back and it goes to the lower side of the range it's been in for the last 3 or 4 months. That would see it coming back towards $80, and then I think people would be looking at it as a value play at that level. But for the moment, it is towards the upper side of its range and performing rather well. Now, precious metals are certainly being seen as a hedge against inflation, and platinum in particular has benefited from Eskom in South Africa curtailing electricity supply to a number of miners. That is certainly racy at this point, and an acceleration is an ending of undetermined duration. But looking at the history of platinum, it tends to accelerate and then it has a very violent reaction and then it goes sideways for a number of years before pushing upwards to new highs. I've no reason to believe that that's not going to be the case again on this occasion. Gold is at $945 today and is looking really rather consistent. It's just broken upwards from a small consolidation, having made a new high. Silver is in a very similar position. It's above $18 today, and they're both looking quite consistent. I doubt that they will be able to maintain that consistency if we see a very big correction in the platinum price. There's no evidence of it just yet, although platinum has lost momentum this week. But for the moment, we can certainly give the upside the benefit of the doubt to go give the up give gold the upside the benefit of the doubt, I should say. And I think it's certainly a time to have a stop in, and I introduced a stop on my positions in here today, and it's an in the money stop. Well, that was also in part because those positions, I bought them rather badly, and they were underwater for much of the last couple of weeks, and I don't want to lose any money in them if they fall back below those range and break the progression of higher lows, because that will be quite a major inconsistency at a time when gold has already had a very good run. So I'm playing it a little more cautiously now than I have over the last couple of weeks. But looking at some of these other commodities, because you have China and India, which account for almost half of the population of the world, growing at such an unbelievably high rate and being able to maintain that high growth rate, their consumption of commodities, particularly industrial and increasingly food commodities, is increasing quite remarkably. The first thing that people do when they move from subsistence living to having a little bit of extra cash to spend is that they improve their diet, they eat better. And we're seeing that happening today in the agricultural commodities. Of course, there is also the fact that biodiesel and ethanol are eating into, quite literally, into the crops that would normally have gone for human consumption. And that is certainly qualifying this market for a supply inelasticity meets rising demand market. We continue to see that they're very volatile commodities, particularly when they are affected by weather, as has increasingly been the case over the last year. And of course, with the grains in particular, you have the fact that global inventories are at historically low levels, even though we've had really quite good growing conditions over the last 10 years. So that is direct evidence that demand is outstripping supply, and there doesn't seem to be any end in sight for that just yet. But they are notoriously volatile and are probably best bought following corrections. The fertilizer companies are making out like bandits in this type of environment, as are the iron ore miners and other resources companies, because they have pricing power. And that is something that the fact that they are able to increase their margins when so many other companies and sectors are facing margin contraction is certainly something that is worthy of mention. Because any industry, in particularly in this environment, which has the ability to expand its margins, is worthy of notice and certainly will attract attention from international investors. These stocks inevitably have corrections, and it has certainly been the case with the miners over the last 5 years that they've been best bought following corrections. And I think that that is almost exactly the same scenario now with the fertilizer companies and with these agricultural commodity companies, that they will be best bought following corrections. And that is probably something that's going to continue for quite some time to come. Looking at the global stock market situation, we started to talk about the wobbly West versus the enterprising East over the last sort of 6 months to a year. And this is because while emerging markets classically are deemed to be high risk, the fact remains that it's the emerging economies of the world are leading in terms of GDP growth. They have capital account surpluses, they have trade surpluses with the rest of the world, they are controlling their economies much better, and they have very large reserves, particularly in the cases of countries like China and a number of the other Asian economies. And when you look at the opposite side of that, you look at Western Europe and you look at the US, where deficits are a problem, where banking system has been reckless in the way it has managed its liabilities, and where we see populations decreasing, where the cost of doing business rising, where you have bureaucracies increasing the weight of regulation, and it's becoming less easy to do business in the West than it is in the East. And certainly that, I think, raises the question as to whether emerging markets are still as high risk as people perceive them to be. But it also means that it's going to be the emerging economies of Asia are probably going to perform far in excess of the performance of Western European and US indices. And that is something that is also a secular theme. The rise of emerging Asia is something that we can anticipate continuing for decades to come. And of course, it is vitally interlaced with the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. Of course, when you've got so many people entering the workplace and young people looking to buy houses and start their own families, they need masses of infrastructure. That is certainly the case in emerging Asia, but it is increasingly the case in the developed world as well. The highway systems of Europe and the US are getting rather old. Water infrastructure, electricity infrastructure is aging, and it will all need to be replaced. So the global infrastructure theme is not just isolated to the Asian themes, although certainly they have a lot more infrastructure to build from scratch than we do in the Western world. But that is certainly an area that will also grow considerably in the next couple of decades. When we as investors look at how we can access these markets, the value of currencies is also very much to the fore. Asian currencies continue to be relatively undervalued following the Asian financial crisis. The Asian dollar index is a useful chart to look at there. Look at as much history as it's got. I think that's in excess of 20 years. And you'll see how undervalued a number of those Asian currencies are. When you look at the chart of the Indian rupee, you'll see that it was remarkably undervalued until really quite recently, and it has embarked on a new secular uptrend. And we can anticipate the Indian rupee getting stronger. GDP growth there is picking up, and the stock market is one of the leaders in the world. So you're getting a double whammy. You're getting a double bang for your buck by investing in India because you've got the currency and the stock market appreciation. It's the same with China. China's yuan will continue to appreciate, and while its stock market is currently going through a correction and could potentially come lower, longer term, the potential for this market to expand is really quite remarkable. And I'm personally willing to wait it out, and I'm going to stick with my Chinese investments until we see them moving upwards once more. And I suppose a final word about the bond markets, because the buying climax that we saw about a month ago is important. And particularly when you look at Australian government bonds, because the Australian economy is very strong, it's got low unemployment and it's got a trade surplus. And of course, it also has massive reserves of some of the most key commodities in the world. But the Australian government bond price has come off really rather considerably, and that was a very long extended top formation. So we can anticipate that government bond yields in Australia are probably going to push upwards, and that is probably a secular theme. And it is also leading the bond markets of a number of other developed economies. It's probably in microcosm what we can expect to see from the bond markets of a number of other countries, but probably not yet. It'll probably take another 3 or 4 years before we see a really big move in bond prices or bond yields pushing upwards and breaking upwards from long-term bases, as we're seeing in Australia today. And with that thought, I will leave you for the evening, but have a very good weekend. I know that I will certainly try and enjoy it. Have a great weekend. Bye bye.